United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Coral W. Peach presiding. God bless the United States and this Honorable Court.
Good afternoon. This is Judge Peach, and I'm joined by Judge Allen and Judge Toth. We are convened today via teleconference to consider arguments in the matter of Luther D. Spicer versus Robert L. Wilkie, Secretary of Veterans Affairs, case number 18-4489. Will counsel, beginning with appellate's counsel, please make your appearance for our record?
Thank you, Your Honor. John Niles, representing the appellant, Mr. Spicer. With me also representing Mr. Spicer is Christopher Murray.
Thank you.
Jessica Grunberg for the Secretary of Veterans Affairs. I'm joined by Ken Walsh.
And counsel for the appellate, do you wish to reserve time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. 10 minutes, please.
Okay, fine. Thank you very much. Now, if counsel are ready, we'll begin with appellant's counsel. Mr. Niles, please proceed when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court. Mr. Spicer seeks secondary service connection because the chemotherapy that he receives for service-connected leukemia prevents him from undergoing knee replacement surgery for bilateral knee arthritis. That arthritis is not otherwise service-connected, but because Mr. Spicer cannot receive knee replacement surgery, his impairment from the arthritis has worsened to where he can no longer walk. He seeks service connection for the increase in severity of arthritis disability that he suffers because his chemotherapy prevents the knee replacement surgery. I will address 2 points. The first is why Mr. Spicer's increase in arthritis disability is within the scope of what Congress unambiguously intends under 38 U.S.C. Section 1131 to be service-connected. The second is why the VA's regulation at 38 CFR Section 3310D does not foreclose Mr. Spicer's entitlement. I will begin with the statute. 38 U.S.C. Sections 1110 and 1131 set out the basic entitlement to service connection in very broad terms. As relevant here, Congress set out that entitlement using 3 words, disability resulting from. Congress easily could have added qualifying language so that this read, disability etiologically resulting from, or disability beyond natural progress resulting from, but it chose the broad language. And Congress carved out only 3 exceptions, foreclosing service connection for disabilities resulting from the veteran's own willful misconduct, abuse of alcohol, or abuse of drugs. And that is it. The broad language that Congress chose for sections 1110 and 1131 thus unambiguously reflects its intent on causation to service connect a disability that has resulted from anything other than those 3 exceptions. And as one example that is both well settled and not disputed here, any increase in an otherwise non-service connected disability will be service connected, no matter whether it results from, on the one hand, a service connected disability, or on the other hand, that service connected disability's treatment. And it is the same principle that applies here. Congress intends that any increase in an otherwise non-service-connected disability will be service-connected no matter whether it results from, on the one hand, etiology, or on the other hand, interference with the second disability's treatment.
Counsel, this is Judge Toth. I mean, the 3 exceptions you give, those strike me as sort of policy determinations either, you know, made by Congress or sort of VA in line with Congress. They're not, they don't speak intrinsically to the meaning of the word resulting from insofar as like if there's an interpretive dispute. I mean, do those 3 actually speak to the meaning of the term resulting from, or do they stand as just sort of three sort of exceptions that Congress has recognized?
Your Honor, Honor, when I think of those three exceptions, I do think of what is causing this disability? What is the method of how are we getting from A to B to C? And I see Congress where it is saying when your A is willful misconduct, abuse of alcohol, or abuse of drugs, there will be no service connection for the B. And so those are, I believe, exceptions that do speak in sort of the same arena as disability resulting from. And on the facts of this case, the Secretary does not dispute that Mr. Spicer's arthritis is a disability, or that it has worsened, or that that has happened because Mr. Spicer's chemotherapy has prevented the knee replacement surgery. And so what the Secretary essentially is asking this court to do here is to write in a new restriction on the basic entitlement to service connection, changing disability resulting from to disability etiologically resulting from, or disability beyond natural progress resulting from, or both. But Congress chose not to do that, and it's Congress's intent that must prevail. Moving on to the regulation, 38 CFR Section 3310B cannot and does not foreclose Mr. Spicer's entitlement to service connection. This is so because, to repeat, Congress's intent here is clear, and under Chevron, that is the end of the matter. Even if Section 1131 were unclear, the Board's denial of secondary service connection still could not stand. Right at the outset, this Court held in Ward v. Wilkie that Section 3310B, the same part at issue here, is not eligible for Chevron deference. It does not interpret a statute. And on etiology specifically, Section 3310B does not even purport to require that a service-connected disability cause a second disability's worsening etiologically. In fact, the regulation's very first words are any increase in severity. It then goes on with that is proximately due to or the result of, and that is very broad language, just as disability resulting from is in Section 1131. The Secretary's own approach to obesity illustrates this breadth. Precedent Opinion 1-17 essentially treats exercise as preventive treatment against obesity. When a service-connected disability interferes with exercise and obesity results, or as we know from Walsh versus Wilkie, worsens, obesity can serve as an intermediate step to entitlement to service connection for another disability. This Court's approach to the language result of also illustrates the point. And in Payne versus Wilkie, 31 Vet App 373, which is in addition to the authorities that Mr. Spicer has cited, the Court examined exactly this result of language in the context of special monthly compensation under 38 U.S.C. Section 1114K. It noted that the language is broad, and it held that result of encompasses multi-link chains of causation. And so A to B to C is fine. And that is what we have here. Section 3310B's opening text thus embraces Mr. Spicer's increase in arthritis disability that has occurred because the chemotherapy for his service-connected leukemia prevents knee replacement surgery. Now, Section 3310B does go on to say that for there to be service connection, the second disability's increase of severity may not be due to its natural progress, but that restriction is not valid. The concept of beyond natural progress belongs to a different statutory context. That is Section 1153, which sets out the presumption of aggravation. The requirement's very inclusion in Section 1153 shows that Congress knew exactly how to impose a restriction of beyond natural progress when and where it desired.
Mr. Niles? This is Judge Allen. Could I ask a quick question about that? Are you giving up the argument that if we applied the language in B talking about natural progress, that you could still prevail under that language?
No, Your Honor. And there are two reasons for this. Number one, if this court were to uphold the beyond natural progress requirement, all of that structure from 1153, then, it seems, would come in. And so as one example, in this court's decision in Verdin versus Brown, it addressed what happens in the 1153 context when an individual enters service with a pre-existing disability, receives medical treatment for that disability during service, and because of that medical treatment, exits service with reduced functional impairment for that disability. And this court held that for 1153 purposes, when that medical treatment reduces the functional impairment, there is no increase in disability that is necessary to trigger the 1153. And so in this proclaimant system, the opposite has to be true as well, where if medical treatment or if the prevention of medical treatment leaves a veteran with an increased functional impairment, as here, then there has to be service connection as a matter of logic. The second reason that I mentioned is that the board did not really engage in beyond natural progress analysis other than to throw it out there as something that must be met. And so for the secretary to rely on that here would require a fair bit of post hoc rationalization that just cannot support affirmance in this matter. And so I will continue that the omission of a beyond natural progress requirement in Section 1131, given that Congress knew exactly how to bring it in if it wanted to, and this is another case where the Veterans Benefits Act of 1957, it has what is now 1110, 1131, and 1153, and Congress really could have just put that right over. It reflects Congress's intent to not impose the restriction upon the basic entitlement to service connection. Yet the Secretary's stated reason when writing the natural progress restriction into Section 3310B in 2006 was interpreting Allen versus Brown to mean that worsening in this secondary service connection context has the same meaning as that Section 1153, quote-unquote, aggravation. And because the Secretary's importation of that more restrictive 1153, or presumption of aggravation concept, into the context of secondary service connection is inconsistent with Congress's intent, again, it is not valid. And this court, of course, is not writing on a blank slate here. In Allen and in Ward, the court held that the basic entitlement to service connection embraces a broader concept of worsening than does Section 1153's quote-unquote aggravation concept. And in Ward, this court also held that Section 1153 aggravation concept has no relevance to secondary service connection. Those decisions are, of course, controlling. And for all of these reasons, Section 3310B, again, cannot and does not foreclose Mr. Spicer's entitlement to secondary service connection. And so, Your Honors, to wrap up, subject to any questions that you have.
Judge Toth, I have a question. Congress, instead of using the terms resulting from, could have said something a little broader like related to or associated with, right? And so, there must be something to their choice of words. I want to ask you this. If we agree with you as to how you would interpret those two words, what would be the limiting principle? I mean, what then would be the natural boundary of the relationship between a secondary condition and a service-connected one if they just have to, you know, if you include this sort of theory of causation?
Your Honor, I find helpful the illustration of a multi-link chain of causation, where every time you're adding another link to that chain, that's something additional the veteran is going to have to prove. And it's going to be case by case whether the veteran will be able to meet that requirement. As one example that may be more difficult than here, imagine a veteran with PTSD, very severe symptoms so severe interfere with the veteran going out of the house even to see a doctor. That veteran develops cancer and then asserts that because the PTSD symptoms were so severe, it prevented the veteran from seeing the doctor would have caught the cancer, and the veteran would have been better off today. As a practical matter, that very well may be just more difficult for the veteran to prove. And so there are many circumstances where under this same theory of service connection, the veteran is simply not going to be able to meet that proof requirement.
Thank you.
Mr. Niles, this is Judge Allen. Before you sit down, I have two questions. They're not related, but I'll just ask them both now. Number one, you submitted a Soulsby notice with respect to the Secretary's proposed rulemaking in response to Ward, and I'd like to have your thoughts about how you think that affects this appeal, if at all. And the second question is, if you were to prevail on your legal arguments, what remedy would you suggest in terms of the court's action?
Your Honor, I will address these questions in turn. On your first question, the proposed rule does not affect this appeal's result at all. The new rule will not be more liberal than the current regulation, and so it's simply not going to apply to Mr. Spicer's claim. What I will add is that what it suggests is that when this court sits down to write its decision in this matter, it may be helpful to clarify what Mr. Spicer already respectfully submits is clear, which is that the text in Section 1110-1131 disability resulting from is unambiguous and must be given effect. For your Honor's second question, the appropriate result here in this case, Mr. Spicer does seek reversal of the denial of service connection. And certainly that means he still has some road ahead of him in that he still needs to have a rating decision issue. If that addresses your Honor's question.
It did. Thank you.
Any further questions, Judge Toth?
I do not. Thanks.
Judge Allen?
I don't. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Niles.
Thank you.
Ms. Goonberg?
Good afternoon, and may it please the court. The court should hold that statutory sections 1110 and 1131 unambiguously preclude secondary service connection for the inability to treat a non-service-connected disability. Alternatively, statutory ambiguity should be resolved by deferring to regulatory section 3.310B, which is a reasonable construction of the statute and prohibits compensation for the natural progress of a non-service-connected disability. The relevant statutory phrase for secondary service connection is disability resulting from. As an initial matter, appellant misconstrues the Secretary's argument as reading etiologically into that phrase. Disability resulting from refers to both causation and aggravation. Aggravation, of course, does not require etiology. As the en banc court stated in Allen, it is a big stretch of the English language to construe etiological relationship as encompassing aggravation. But what appellant is seeking is compensation in the absence of causation or aggravation. He's seeking compensation where there is no link between the worsening of his knees and his service-connected leukemia. That is contrary to the plain meaning of disability resulting from. Resulting from, as defined by appellant, is to occur as a consequence of. But his arthritis progressing is not a consequence of his inability to treat it. He has conceded it onset and worsened irrespective of his leukemia, and he does not explain how the inability to treat results in disability. Treatment was potentially...
Ms. Grunberg, yes. This is Judge Allen. Could I ask a question on that point? So, in general tort law, there are situations in which a wrongful act can lead to liability because it prevents a plaintiff in that scenario from making something better. So, for example, there are cases in the context of medical malpractice cases where the medical malpractice causes a harm, yes, but also the resulting nature of the harm it causes prevents a plaintiff from getting some benefit, making something better. And tort law will generally, subject to proof, allow that type of recovery. Why should we assume that Congress in 1131 didn't legislate, if you will, with respect to the common law background of claims like that? And there are other examples as well. I'm just using the medical malpractice as one of them.
Yes, Your Honor. I suppose overall, I would submit that the Title 38 is not based on the common law of torts per se. I understand that hypothetical you're asking, though. The phrase here, regardless of disability resulting from, which this court has explained is either causation or aggravation, even as appellant stated, there would have to be some type of link. Here, there really is no link. His knees would progress irrespective of leukemia or chemotherapy, and the treatment would really just potentially decrease the non-service-connected disability, which is not synonymous with results in increase. And the Longley memorandum decision from Judge Hagel is instructive on that point. In that memorandum decision, he explains that the preclusion of treatment does nothing to inform the court that a disability is related to a service-connected condition because treatment has no impact on the development of a disability. Rather, medical treatment is designed to interfere with the progression of a disability, and that is not contemplated by the plain language of the statute. The inability to treat theory is also contrary to the purpose of the rating scheme, which is to compensate for disabilities that are incident to military service. The inability to treat theory would allow compensation for disabilities that are not related to service. But as the Federal Circuit stated in Terry, 1110 and 1131 make clear that if a disability cannot be attributed to an injury or disease in service, it is not compensable. So it makes sense that this court in Allen specified that 1110 permits compensation for only the degree of worsening resulting from a service-connected condition. If this court does determine that there is ambiguity in the statutory phrase, it should defer to Section 3.310B. It's undisputed that the inability to treat theory would fail under the language of the regulation, given the natural progress language, despite, I think, what appellant has argued for the first time here today. In his briefing, however, he provided a rewritten version of the regulation instead. But this court has stated numerous times it does not rewrite regulations, and it has rejected a similar attempt, including in Atencio. Like the appellant in that case, the appellant here is saying, I do not fall under subsection A causation or subsection B aggravation, but I should be compensated even though there is no subsection C inability to treat natural progress. But as written, 3.310B prohibits that theory of compensation. And contrary to the dicta in Ward, Section 3.310B is entitled to deference. The Supreme Court has explained that it is immaterial to a Chevron analysis that a regulation is prompted by litigation. As explained in Morton specifically, the court stated that litigation often brings to light questions or ambiguities, so a regulation responding to litigation shows only that the agency is doing the task Congress has assigned it. Here, Congress delegated authority to VA in Section 501, and 3.310B was implemented after notice and comment. Additionally, that subsection interprets 1110 and 1131. It doesn't just restate Allen. For example, it provides a way to calculate aggravation. And as stated in the final rule, some questions were left open after Allen, and VA was providing guidance through that regulation for secondary service connection after that en banc decision.
Ms. Grunberg, this is Judge Allen again. I'm sorry. On that point, so I confess that I'm in line with you on what you just said in terms of I don't know what it means to really say that a regulation is not subject to Chevron. I've never seen that before. But that's what Ward actually said. I mean, it says it quite dispositively and distinctly. You mentioned you think it's dicta. I'm not sure that's right. But why wouldn't we be bound by that statement, even if wrong, because it's authoritative and recent?
Yes, Your Honor. I have a few points on that. First, the Ward decision stated only it notes that Chevron does not apply. It did not really further analyze or address the issue of deference, which is likely because the parties in that case didn't raise the issue of Chevron deference. Further, the issue of Chevron deference was not central to its holding because the court was considering a dispute over a term that was not in the regulation. That term, of course, is permanent. So it wasn't determining whether that language of the regulation was valid under the statute because that language wasn't even in the regulation. So if anything, that would be more of an hour difference issue. But even if it is a holding, it should be limited to the question at issue there, that language not in the regulation, particularly because the court in Ward stated that the entire regulatory section was not entitled to deference, which would include the parts predating Allen, but its deference discussion was based on the fact that subsection B was implemented after Allen.
Thank you. And if I could follow up, so I just want to make sure I'm not mischaracterizing the position. It is the Secretary's position that natural progress essentially means progress in a world where there is no treatment. Is that right?
The term natural progress would, yes, be just the typical progression of a disability, yes, uninhibited by other issues, I suppose, if that answers your question.
Yeah, so my I just want to make sure I do capture it, that basically the position is that no matter how commonplace a treatment, say, a drug or, in this case, an operation, but no matter how medicine has dealt with something, we do not include that as part of natural. We treat it in a world, you know, where there is no such thing as medicine, for lack of a better way to put it.
Yes, yes, I believe that's correct, Your Honor.
Thank you.
So applying Chevron, the court should uphold Section 3.310B because it's not contrary to the statute. As I mentioned earlier, statutory Sections 1110 and 31 require that type of resulting from relationship, and that doesn't show that Congress intended to permit compensation for disabilities that are not linked to service. and as stated in Walsh, subsection B is consistent with Allen. It's also not unreasonable that VA excluded natural progress as compensable. As explained in the final rule, you would only service connect a part of a disability due to aggravation under 1110 because VA doesn't compensate for non-service connected disabilities. And it's irrelevant that the phrase natural progress is not in the statutory text, as appellant has argued. As this court in Brenneser stated, the function of a regulation is to interpret a statute, not to mimic it. So regulations are supposed to provide guidance on how to implement a statute. The use of natural progress here does exactly that because it tells raters how to calculate aggravation by deducting the baseline and the naturally progressing disability from the current level. So appellant relies on Ward to attack this use of natural language, but as I noted earlier, Ward is irrelevant in this context because the disputed language in that case wasn't even in the regulation, whereas there's no dispute here that the term natural progress is in the regulation. So the issue is not the Secretary adding restrictions outside of the regulatory language. Appellant also has not shown that VA has recognized the inability to treat theory. He relies on three items for this argument, the first being the decision in Burris, in which this court noted only that the RO there granted benefits secondary to mustard gas exposure, meaning mustard gas contributed to the veteran's death, which is what the surviving son argued in that case. But doesn't show that there was a grant of secondary service connection based on the inability to treat. The court simply noted inability to treat was part of the widow's 1151 argument. Even so, as appellant concedes, one wrong rating decision or board decision would not be binding, and it also wouldn't show that the regulation is arbitrary, especially because Burris predates the addition of subsection B in 2006. The GC precedential opinion on obesity also does not address the inability to treat theory. It merely creates an intermediate step exception for obesity. And as explained in Walsh, that opinion specifies that obesity must be caused by service-connected condition and a factor in causing or aggravating another condition. So there are those two links, which are absent in the inability to treat context. And lastly, appellant cites the cardiovascular rating schedule revisions, which also don't support the theory. It just shows how VA rates certain service-connected conditions. It's not relevant to the issue of secondary service connection, and it doesn't say anything about secondary service connection for a comorbid condition preventing treatment for the heart. And if there are no further questions...
Judge Allen, for any further questions?
No, I don't, Judge Peach.
Judge Toth, any further questions?
Just one real quick. Counsel, you mentioned a case called Perry. Did I hear that right? And I looked quickly at your table of authority. It's not there. So any guidance you could give where I can look that up?
Your Honor, I'm sorry. That was Perry with a T.
Oh, okay, got it. So T-R-R-Y?
T-E-R-R-Y, and that's 340F3rd, 1378.
Excellent. Thank you. That's all I got.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel for the appellate?
Thank you, Your Honor. I will start with a brief quotation from Chevron, since the Secretary is asking for Chevron deference. This begins from the court's part two of that opinion. When a court reviews an agency's construction of the statute which it administers, there has to be, and I'll stop at the quote there, there has to be an interpretation of a statute to get Chevron deference. When the Secretary revised Section 3310B in 2006 to impose a beyond natural progress requirement that mimics what you can see in Section 1153 that was plain to Congress that Congress could have carried over into the basic entitlement of service connection had it so desired, did not do so. When the when the Secretary was doing that in 2006, again, that was interpreting Allen versus Ward and misinterpreting, I'm sorry, Allen versus Brown, and misinterpreting Allen versus Brown very badly. Mr. Spicer's circumstances present perhaps the ideal fact pattern where acknowledging service connection would effectuate Congress's intent not to impose an ideological causation requirement or to carry over Section 1153's beyond natural progress restriction into the basic entitlement of service connection. Even accepting that Mr. Spicer's bilateral knee progress progressed along a natural course, it would not have done so had he undergone knee replacement surgery, which in the Secretary's position boils down to putting blinders on to everything except for that immediate cause when, again, A to B to C is fine. He cannot receive that knee replacement surgery due to his service-connected leukemia. His service-connected leukemia is driving all of this. Quite simply, Mr. Spicer's bilateral knee arthritis is worse today than it was in 2013, and that results from his service-connected leukemia. Once again, Mr. Spicer asks that this court implement Section 1131 exactly as Congress wrote it. Disability resulting from, not disability etiologically resulting from, or disability beyond natural progress resulting from. And so he respectfully requests that the board's denial of secondary service connection be reversed.
Thank you. Any questions, Judge Allen?
No, I'm all good. Thank you.
Judge Toth?
Nor me. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Niles. The case will be submitted, and the court is in recess now. Thank you.
Thank you.
Court is in recess.